Oh, and it's this idea of solidarity. You know, we preach it all the time to our driver community. We have, been on the strike lines with, IAM Local 63, the Boeing machinists when they were striking, Oregon Nurses Association at Providence St. V's before they got their new contract. And, it's been amazing to see the support that we've been shown as well in our fight.
So for the listeners who may want to get in touch with Drivers Union Oregon, or for other drivers who may want to get in touch, what can they do? Where can they go?
You can find us pretty easily. If you search Drivers Union Oregon, you can find our website, which is driversunionor.org. We are on all major social media platforms. If you're a driver, listening to this, we are fighting for better pay. Come fight with us. If you are interested in joining our coalition or learning more, please contact us. We would love to have a schedule a meeting with you to discuss that more. And I think the last thing I would say is, a lot of us use the service. I still take rides every now and again when I need them. Please share what you've heard here. Just talk to your driver. Tell him we have a union, Drivers Union Oregon. Drivers are fighting for better pay, and this is how we do it.
Thanks for listening to Policy for the People on KBOO Community Radio. Before we go, let me remind you to please help us reach our $45,000 KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive goal by showing your support today at kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Thanks, and we will see you next
time. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland. At the annual meeting, members will have the opportunity to meet candidates running in the board election. Final votes will be cast and counted. The results of the elections will be announced at the end of the meeting. Online boarding is open now through the annual meeting at kboo.fm/board25. Paper ballots will be sent to members by mail. Again, that's KBOO's annual meeting and board election on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios, located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/board25.
Good morning, and thanks for listening to Film at 11 here on your community radio, KBOO Portland. KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform, which means we are funded by you, the listener. This morning, we have Ben Garbolano on the controversial subject of the Bond Girl. Here I am with Ben, our resident James Bond expert. And in this very special Film 11, we're going to be discussing perhaps the most controversial aspect of the Bond series, the Bond girls. I mean, even the very name of that subcategory is offensive to lots of people because of the use of the word girls when all of these people are full-grown, mostly competent women. Already it's offensive.
This is going to be one we're going to dance around the eggshells on, but it's an iconic part of the entire franchise. I'm sure from book to film.
Exactly. It is,
there's no way to not associate the girls, the Bond girls, Bond women, when thinking about James Bond. There's just no way. And everybody's got to have their favorite one depending upon when they grew up or whether they've seen them all or not, and then how they age and what they truly like, whether it's beauty, it's expertise, it's mirroring James Bond's abilities as, you know, as an agent, a super agent, or just the typical damsel in distress story.
And it's a tradition that you can also, some people just simply hate, partially because of the comical names that some of the Bond girls had. Almost all of them come from Ian Fleming originally. Obviously, he was, there's a quality of caricature or satire attached to his books that most people don't really see, but you find it in the names of people and in the some of the more outlandish situations as the series moves on. Now, they start out being extremely realistic, the books, and then around the time of Goldfinger, I guess, maybe a little bit earlier than that, the supervillain became a central element with a huge world domination plan. And that ultimately made the movie, the books, more cinematic. And from the very first one, the first Broccoli one, Dr. No, all of those elements are already in place, including a series of Bond girls, starting with Honeychild Ryder is the first one. But there's also, well, she's called Honey Ryder in the movie. And then there's a de femme fatale, Ms. Tarot. I don't remember Sylvia Trench very well, but she's another character from the movie. She's his girlfriend that he keeps abandoning to go off to do these adventures.
I'd say she was the girlfriend. It's a little hard to define, at least from the films. But yeah, I mean, she is one of the few that is in two movies.
That's right.
And for them to be back to back, she is one of two. There's also Miss Tarot, Xena Marshall.
Yeah, she is the one who tries to lure James Bond to his death. She takes pictures of him and these other things. Anyway, he eliminates her at a certain point. But she's an operative of Dr. No.
Yeah.
The first thing I would want to point out is there's a lot more variety to the so-called Bond girls than the Playboy Hugh Hefner photo spread, inevitable photo spread with each new film would suggest. They all different. They're different in skills, in motivation, in mission. For example, I think of Goldfinger, and he encounters a woman who's basically doing what he's trying to do, only she's interfering with him. And she's a marksman, and she drives a fast car. She's basically him, only she's got a personal grudge against Goldfinger. And then, of course, there's Diana Rigg as the woman who marries him, and she's a real person in the movie. And I just think that, to a certain degree, the Bond girl image gets a bum rap, but it certainly is a part of its time, in the sense that it fit into the Playboy magazine ethos of the 60s. And they really helped each other. The Bond movies and the Playboy magazine were like almost married to each other in promoting each other over the course of a decade or so.
Yeah, the 60s and the 70s, I definitely agree. That was before my time. I'd have to go to the library to find a Playboy that old. But definitely seemed like it was kind of going hand in hand.
Yeah.
And also, as you know, coming out of the 50s, you know, like sex was starting to sell.
And part of this Bond affect is the swinging London aspect, which is not only just including Bond, but other Michael Caine and other people who play spies who also have a less rigid morality than what you're used to from seeing Hollywood movies from the 40s and 50s, and where sex is discussed and pregnancies occur. The so-called kitchen sink or dirty realism movies of the 60s were in direct competition with the fantastical element of the Bond movies. Playboy, of course, was a major innovator in that regard, and just being the magazine you could buy in the newsstand that had nude people in it, it was amazing in its way, you know. Once the Hugh Hefner solidified what the Playboy epitomized, then the James Bond character melded into that, and vice versa. I mean, they both fed off of each other over the course of time. Okay, it's true that sometimes the women are presented as playthings, like Dink, the woman masseuse in Goldfinger, who appears only briefly at the very start of the movie at the hotel.
Yeah, with such an affectionate name.
It is. I don't even know what it means, but it means something small and cute, I guess, like Dinky. Anyway, these things are, from one viewpoint, lamentable, and from another, they're just satire. They're just beyond. They're not to be taken seriously, you know. And anyway, there's so much variety to the Bond girls that you can't peg them. For example, my favorite Bond girl is Honor Blackman in Goldfinger. Unfortunately, her name is Pussy Galore, and that's Ian Fleming's fault, not the movie's, because she's really interesting. For one thing, she is a pilot and is part of the Goldfinger team. In the book, she's a lesbian, and he, of course, converts her to heterosexuality with his mastersomeness. But
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's really one of the most interesting of the written characters. For Fleming, it's just a certain raciness that he's inserting into the book, but sort of hinted at in the movie, but not much, you know, just by her attire and her demeanor. Anyway, so that's my favorite Bond girl.
That's your favorite Bond girl still to date?
Right to this day, yeah. I'm looking at the list of all the others, and a lot of them are fine. I love a lot of these performers and the characters they play, like Jill St. John playing Tiffany Case and a few others. But of the modern ones, I know that Eva, or is it Ava?
Ava Green.
Ava Green is extremely popular amongst Bond girl aficionados.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, she's, you know, like I watched a few review videos out there on YouTube, and I mean, for the most part, for anybody that seems like they're born after the 80s, she's pretty much like hitting damn near number one on every single person's list. And I mean, and I get it. You know, like she feels like a real person in that movie. They have really good on-screen chemistry,
right?
Whether she's being extremely vulnerable, like there's that whole shower scene after I think he just, you know, had the protector kill a couple of people or something. And you know, they have this, you know, like really, like it's really eye opening, like of the pain and trauma that's like immediately being like experienced right there.
Right.
But she's also, you know, she's sassy with him. You know, she can hold her end of the conversation, not really so much bad one-liners like that, how they did Halle Berry a disjustice and Die Another Day. You know, like, you know, that's like going from that completely and completely rebooting the series, probably better than any franchise has ever kind of been rebooted in film history.
That's a good point. Yeah,
I mean, because like you had the, you know, I grew up in the Brosnan era, and I mean, like my favorite Bond girl growing up and probably still to this day is Natalia from Goldeneye. I probably will butcher this, so maybe edit it out, but I think it's Natalia Semenova. Played by Isabella Scorupco. Which I'm also probably butchering that, but you know, I mean, she was also a very very much an identifiable, not like a written character, but like, you know, she's just a worker at a satellite facility, and all of her friends get killed in the first 5 minutes of the movie. Like James Bond isn't even in the first like 10 minutes of the movie or whatever.
Right.
You know, and it's all the story about her, and you know, like she's motivated to find out what happened to her friends and is doing her own bit of detective work. And then till they like finally really meet each other, and you know, she's really good with computers. He has no idea what, you know, like how to try to hack and find Boris, trace Boris's, you know, network that he has bouncing off, you know, 18 different countries in order to hide his location. Probably it's her and Diana Rigg.
Yeah, and Ava Green is interesting because she's not a traditional fashion model style beauty with which the series more or less began. She's waif thin and she's got exotic looks that are non-traditional, kind of sharp and intelligent. And some of the others are incredibly beautiful, like Diana Rigg, but they make up for it by just being well-trained performers. You know, there's so many unique facets to the on Her Majesty's Secret Service. The one, as it's one without Sean Connery, but before Roger Moore, it is different in tone. I mean, it's got really bad special effects, but it also has a different tone from the. It kind of goes back to the original style of plot where. Well, I mean, there's an evil genius who's trying to take over the world, but he seems to be living in reduced circumstances. He doesn't have hordes of minions who apparently think nothing of sacrificing their lives. You know, I mean, you'd think that, you know, once it turns out that everybody, but James Bond is destroying everything, why don't these people, like, on Doctor No, why don't they just swim away? Why are they still fighting? I never understood that, but that's just a, you know, otherwise you wouldn't have a movie or so. In defense of the Bond girl, producers did show a tendency towards innovation and doing really interesting things with the character type over the course of years.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree. I mean, when I was growing up, my favorite Bond girl was Mary Goodnight, played by Britt Eklund.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I can't say it's not because, you know, or, well, how should I say it? It's purely in the case of the fact that she is running around in a bikini for like three quarters of the movie. And, well, you know, then, like, she's a smart agent, but at the same time is, you know, like, bumps into something with her butt and, you know, like, damn near kills Bond with a laser.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's funny. Well, also, yeah, and she's beautiful. So, you know, that's part of the reason people like to go to the movies and look at other people. We must accept that. I know many of us don't, but it's the hinge on which a lot of Hollywood, at least, works, both for men and women in movies.
I would totally agree with that. I think there's a flip side to that coin. I've had friends over the past that, you know, did not care for the genre whatsoever, but, you know, they sure thought that Daniel Craig was very hot, and they would go see the movie just to see Daniel Craig. You know, interested in the violence, not interested in the spy genre or anything like that. You know, they were just, you know, and with this new proposed Henry Cavill being James Bond, I guarantee there will be women that do not care for the series whatsoever, but, you know, they want to see Superman.
It makes sense. But to me, it strikes me as another Australian car dealer, like the
At least he has an established, like, background. You know, like, he's been acting for, you know, he's been in the limelight for at least a decade right now.
Yeah, and before that, he did a lot of British television and British movies. Not unlike Sean Connery, who was one of those overnight successes that took 18 years. You know.
Yeah.
And you are listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland. Please consider becoming a member today. We here at KBOO Community Radio want to assure our listeners that despite losing federal public radio grants and the Corporation of Public Broadcasting preparing to shut down, we will continue to unapologetically represent the voices of our community, and we will not waver in times of difficulty. KBOO is made by people like you, for people like you, and is accountable only to you. With the loss of $110,000 in federal funding, we're counting on supporters like you to help make up the loss and make KBOO stronger than ever. Go to kboo.fm/donate and support KBOO's mission today. We've been talking to Ben Garbolano, and he is our resident Bond expert. And at some point, we're going to dedicate another episode to Bond machinery. I still think we've done the cars, but I don't think we've done, you know, the things like the outer space stations and laser beams and things like that. You know, all the gadgets that he has.
Yeah, we definitely need to dedicate an episode to Q Branch and the and then yeah, some of like the most ostentatious facilities, and yeah, you know, like there's
exactly. Sometime this fall, early in fall, we'll open the Q Branch of Film at 11.
Real quick though, Doug, I would like just for fun, what was the worst Bond girl?
Oh. That is a really good question. I would have to say somebody from one of the early films, like From Russia With Love, before they figured out what the prototype should be. So I would, Tatiana Romanova, played by Daniela Bianchi, who I think just died recently. Or then you got Rosa Klebb, played by Lotta Lenya. I don't know. I mean,
that's not a Bond girl, though.
I mean, know. There's
Kissy Suzuki from You Only Live Twice. I mean, they barely even had a Bond girl in that one.
I know.
And she replaced Aki, or Aki replaced her. I can never really remember. It's one of Sean Connery's not good movies. There's also Stacey Sutton, played by Tanya Roberts.
Oh, Tanya Roberts. Really kill. Oh, poor Tanya Roberts. She was such a charismatic person, but she just wasn't a very good performer, I'm sorry to say.
It seemed like they really typecasted that one, because I mean, like, she shrieks more in that film than almost any other girl does combined in all other movies. I didn't come up with this idea myself, but like, somebody pointed out how genuinely surprised her acting looks when she is sneaked up by a blimp and grabbed from the ground, you know, like by Christopher Walken. I would definitely rewatch that scene.
Yes,
it is
definitely.
Just,
yeah.
It's just
that's
like
a good one.
Wow. I just wanted to give a shout out to Denise Richards in The World Is Not Enough. While her role is a bit tame, she was absolutely beautiful. Olga Kurylenko in Quantum of Solace, really kind of a tough girl, you know, in a very unique situation. It's almost like a Japanese background with how they portrayed her. But yeah, I mean, she is certainly a force to be reckoned with. Also, Agent Paloma in No Time to Die, played by Ana de Armas. She's absolutely stunning. She sells herself as had 3 weeks of training and then goes off to murder about 15 agents, maybe more than all other Bond girls combined. The last part's probably not true, but very well-rounded, quick little character, not really the Bond girl. Obviously, that was Lea Seydoux, Dr. Madeleine Swann, you know, his main interest for Spectre and No Time to Die. But as one of the side characters of Bond girls, I think Agent Paloma is definitely deserves a mention.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for your time, Doug.
Thank you. Goodbye.
And thank you for listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland. Film at 11. We'll be back next Friday. So until then, keep watching the screens.
And life seems to for the stranger is gone. There's dreams for you, so play the games. When one dream come true, you only lived once.
Thank you. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Urban League of Portland, celebrating its 80th anniversary as a local civil rights organization. Urban League PDX provides housing, education, health care, and career services to